Schedules and Security for Mom. Hey, welcome. It's another look into the life and message of Elizabeth Elliot, who called us to live to a higher standard and not be satisfied with just a little empty religion in life as a shallow substitute for giving God our best. As our series continues in the coming weeks, we'll hear from family, friends, and others who were influenced by Elizabeth's life and message. Hey, welcome. Good to have you along. Well, today we begin a short series on mothering, questions on mothering, as we have a special guest, Shelley Russell, joining us today. We'll be talking about children and schedules and children's security. Also joining us today, Elizabeth's daughter, Valerie Shepherd, and Walt Shepherd, her husband. We'll talk about the sad, sweet, stinking self and about the value of a finished preacher. And appropriately enough, as we think about motherhood, Elizabeth will talk about finding time to do the things that matter. That coming later. Right now, let's get to part one of Questions on Mothering, Children and Schedules, with our guest, Shelley Russell. Let's hear about civilizing little barbarians and losing track of our own needs.
The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking today in the studio with a new friend. Not very long ago, I had a letter from a young mother named Shelley Russell. And it so happens that she and her husband invited me and my husband to have dinner with them. Well, almost the entire dinner hour, we spent discussing some questions that I think will be of interest to a great many of our listeners. Shelley, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. And first of all, please just tell our listeners a little bit about who you are, where you're from.
I'm from Northern Indiana. I met my husband there, and we've been married 6.5 years, and I have a 1-year-old daughter.
And what does your husband do?
My husband is a data processing consultant.
And are you a full-time mother, or are you a working mother?
I'm a full-time mother.
Full-time, a career mother, shall we say.
Yes.
Well, I'm so glad that you can stay home with your little Julia, 1-year-old Julia, whom I just met a few minutes ago, here in the studio with her daddy. And as we were discussing the whole business of raising children, you told us a little bit about your background. Would you like to just give us a few hints on the kind of a home you came from?
My home was a little more abusive in nature. It was emotionally abusive and sometimes physically abusive. I had 2 stepbrothers, and I have a biological brother, and I really didn't have any kind of example that I want to follow in parenting or in mothering.
One of the things that I think you said to me 2 or 3 times as we were eating dinner was, I don't have wisdom. Now, I don't really meet very many people of your generation that are the least bit worried about whether they have wisdom. I think they're more interested in knowledge. Why are you so interested in wisdom?
I'm interested in wisdom because I believe wisdom is from the Lord. Knowledge I can gain from a lot of books, and there's a lot of books out there nowadays, but I believe that wisdom is from the Lord.
Well, bless your heart. Have you got a question you'd like to ask me?
Yes. First of all, I've been reading many books and talking to many people about mothering, and their basic philosophy is in making the child feel secure. And I'm just wondering what your basic philosophy is in raising children. What would be the phrase that you would use?
Well, there are different ways I could express it. I've sometimes said, I think, on this program that the Lord gives us little barbarians, and it's our job to civilize them. I do believe, because I'm a Christian, that we are born in sin, which means that we have a rebel nature in us. But a child comes into a family. In fact, he is a very important element of a family. It's one thing when you're just a couple, isn't it? And it's a very different thing when you become 3. And that child is now a part of a home and a part of a family. But the great difference between the way some would look at it and the way I think a Christian should look at it, is that the child is often in charge of the home. The whole routine of the family seems to revolve around the child. I don't think it should be that way. My philosophy is this child was given to the parents by God, and God holds the parents responsible to bring the child up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Before the child comes into the home, my husband and I were both working, and I had a definite schedule. Then all of a sudden I have this baby, and I'm not sure quite what to do with it. So what I began doing is working around her schedule. When she would wake up, I would feed her. I would feed her to go to sleep. When she wanted to be held, I would hold her. When she needed changed, I would change her. And all of a sudden, I was meeting all of her needs. And I believe I even lost track of my own needs, what they even were, because she became the center of our attention. How long is a baby the center of attention, and when do you begin to start a schedule?
Well, I don't think that the baby should be the center of attention all the time. There are times, of course, when the mother and the daddy are just giving their full attention to the child, and that's a good thing for brief periods of the day. As far as when do you start a schedule, I think it should be day one when you get home from the hospital. The earlier you start, the easier it's going to be. And the more used the child gets to getting her own way, the more chaotic it's going to be. This is not going to destroy their sense of security, and it is very important that the child learn that there is a time to sleep and a time to wake, a time to be quiet and a time to play, a time to eat and a time to refrain from eating. Just as the book of Ecclesiastes says, there is a time for everything. I grew up in a home which I would not call regimented, but it was an ordered home. And we had breakfast at a certain time, and that was not flexible because of the fact that my father had to make a commuter train. Now, if my mother had been trying to have the whole family revolve around the newborn when there were, you know, when number six came, for example, it would have been total chaos. But from the very beginning, my parents had taken the view, this is our home, we have our life to live, and this little child is welcome and loved in this home, and this little child, it's our responsibility to teach to fit into our schedule. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. I just am wondering, how do you go about setting up a schedule? Is each child different? Do some children sleep for 5 hours and some children maybe 6 hours a night? How do you figure out their schedule? And how do you figure out your own schedule?
Well, there's a very good book that I do want to recommend. I've recommended some books for helping you to get your child on a schedule. And this one's called Preparation for Parenting. Let me just read one paragraph out of here. She says, they say, this is a couple, I think, that has written this book, your strategy will be made up of three basic activities that repeat themselves throughout the day: feeding time, wake time, and nap time. Please note, that's in italics, the order of events cannot be changed. Feeding must be first, wake time must be second, and nap time must be third. The most common mistake young mothers make is to reverse nap time and wake time. Do you think you did that?
I don't think I'm understanding totally how you would do that.
Did you revert, well, when you finished feeding the baby, was it nap time or wake time?
Usually nap time.
Nap time, okay. So you were making the common mistake that these people say young mothers make, reversing nap time and wake time. The order is wake time is second. Feeding first, wake time second, nap time third. Newborns are very sleepy, and you will initially have to work on keeping your baby awake after feeding. If you change the order, you will end up wondering why your baby cries so much. Now, this is one book, Preparation for Parenting, and it is a biblical perspective, a study in the philosophy, physiology, and practice of nurturing a newborn. And I don't remember exactly what my mother's schedule was. I happen to be the second of six, so I very clearly remember the births of the youngest three. And I know that there was a schedule. When my mother had fed and changed the baby, then She could leave the baby in his crib or in his playpen, whatever was her schedule. But she had too many other things to be revolving around that child. Did you and John ever worry about what you were going to do when you had two children, if all your time was taken up with Julia?
We've thought about it, especially because she is so clingy now, and she even at times, when another child is touching my leg, she'll take that child's hand off of my leg because she's jealous already.
What does this tell you about
Julia? That she's learned to be demanding.
Very possessive.
Yes.
Of her mother.
Yes, and I want to change that.
What about when you want to take a shower?
She does follow me in.
She follows you in.
Right, and she also doesn't like it when I take a shower. And I even have tried to take her in the shower with me or the bathtub with me. And in the bathtub, she's pretty comfortable. But in the shower, she doesn't like that at all. So I'll stick her outside and she'll scream. So what I began to do is get up early in the morning, around 5:30, because she woke up at 6, and rush around to take a shower. Then when she got up, I would sit and drink some tea while she played, and she was content, and then I would feed her and get her ready. Usually a couple hours later, it was nap time, and again, I would rush around to do my housework. And one thing my husband brought up to me is that by doing that, she was not going to see that Mommy had work to do, and she wasn't going to learn that she couldn't take up all of my time. And also, how would she even know that I was doing anything since she was asleep while I was doing it?
She would think you did nothing but drink tea and watch her play, or
exactly,
get into the bathtub with her, or hover over her, whatever she was doing. Your schedule revolved entirely around Julia, or in fact, Julia was telling you what you could do when, is that right?
Exactly.
Didn't you tell me that she would stand outside the shower and scream?
Yes.
Why? What does that tell you? What was she saying to you?
She was saying to me, Mommy, I want you now. And I knew, I began learning that that was not appropriate, that she had to learn to be by herself. And that's one of the reasons that I even brought up parenting with you, is because I wanted to learn what is right and what is the correct way of training her and bringing her up.
Thank you, Shelley Russell. We're going to be talking some more about these questions of how to bring up a baby.
Questions on Mothering, Part 1, Children and Schedules. Well, Walt and Valerie Shepherd join us today. Valerie is the daughter of Elizabeth, Walt the son-in-law, as they talk about the sad, sweet, stinking self.
I love the one that says, deliver me from my sad, sweet, stinking self.
You can say who that's from.
I have no idea.
Okay. When my mother was at Prairie Bible Institute, the president was quite a character, and he preached regularly to the student body. And he one time started a prayer with that. Oh Lord, deliver us from our sad, sweet, stinking selves. And my mother caught on her ear, and she quoted it often. But she said it was because Dr. Maxwell heard all these pitiful stories of students wanting to confess their sins, but so often it's not something that has to be shared with the whole congregation. And he knew that they were trying to be honest and real and confess their sins, but not all sins have to be confessed openly. But that's why he prayed that way. So my mother loved that phrase.
Val's mom, as my landlady, loved to come up to me because she knew I was studying for the ministry and say, you know the quote, I like a finished preacher? No, not a polished one, but one who's through. And I go, yes, ma'am.
Walt and Valerie Shepherd joining us today. That's from a 2022 talk at St. Philip's Church. Later on, Elizabeth will talk about time management, but right now, let's get to Children's Security, Part 2 of Questions on Mothering, with Shelley Russell. And what if a mom is trying to do what she needs to do, but her young child is crying the whole time? And can you trust your own instincts when it comes to motherhood?
This is your friend Elizabeth Elliott talking again today with my friend Shelley Russell. We've been discussing raising an infant. Now, Shelley, in our last program, just toward the end, we got on the subject of what happens when you go into the bathroom to take a shower. Would you repeat what you said Julia does?
Yes, Julia does not like it when I take a shower because she's not involved in the process, of course. And she will stand outside of the shower and cry and scream and try to look in the shower until I am done. And the whole time I'm getting ready, she will cry.
Why didn't you just close the bathroom door?
All the information that I had read mentioned bringing your baby with you wherever you were so that they could see you and be secure.
This whole thing of security indicates how insecure the world really is. I think God has created mothers and fathers with natural instincts of how to be good fathers and how to be good mothers. And if you really love your child, I think that your common sense is going to tell you probably a great deal more than the books. One thing I do want to mention here, since we've discussed the shower curtain business, that's the issue of modesty and privacy. I certainly don't think that there's something immoral about a one-year-old little girl watching her mother take a shower, but I think you ought to have some quiet time yourself. I think you ought to be able to have some privacy. When you go into the bathroom, you ought to be able to close the door. And if Julia screams outside the door, then it's very clear to me that you need to train her to be by herself, to realize the security that she has in you is that you're not going to abandon her. You're right there. She knows where you are. You will be back, and you do love her. And you come back out, and you give her a hug, and maybe take her to the kitchen with you or whatever you're going to do. The greatest thing that the child needs is the knowledge that the mother is there, and the mother is not going to abandon them. And every time they're out of your arms doesn't mean that they have been abandoned. Rocking time is important. And of course, breastfeeding is the most wonderful, intimate period when 5 or 6 times a day, the baby is held as closely as a baby can be held physically to the mother. That is a wonderful way of indicating security. Every time you smile at your child, every time you touch her or hold her in any way, you are reassuring her that you're there, that you love her, and that what you want to do is to make her happy. And another thing which I think establishes security, second only in importance to the physical expressions of love for a child, is the schedule itself in giving the child security. A child is amazing at learning very quickly, very early, that certain things are going to happen at certain times. And he will get used to that. If you've ever raised a puppy or a kitten, you see the same thing. The puppy gets used to his place of sleeping. He gets used to the times of feeding. He gets used to, if he hears the leash rattle, he knows he's going to go out for a walk. And I often say to young parents, if you want a good practice before you have a baby, the thing to do is to get a puppy. And if you can't agree on how you're going to raise that puppy, you're going to have a lot of trouble when you raise that child. But the schedule, far from instilling a rigidity, actually, I believe, it instills security.
Going back to the privacy issue and having your baby be outside of the bathroom while you're taking a shower or going to the washroom, I've read that your child doesn't know yet that they are separate from you, that they're a separate individual, so that when you leave the child, they
feel abandoned, right?
Right.
They feel abandoned. But if you conform to everything that the child wants you to do, all you're doing is perpetuating that idea. Now, Shelley, as you know, I lived with primitive Indians in the jungle for many years, and I watched the way those Indians took care of their babies. Now, the mothers generally carried the baby in a sling, or the Alka women didn't even have slings. They just literally carried the babies dangling by the neck from their hips. I mean, the mother clamped the baby to her hip with her wrist, and the baby was just sort of dangling there. So they were in physical contact with their mothers pretty much all the time for the first year, until they were weaned anyway. But the time had to come when they were very rather forcibly separated from their mothers, because they would be left home in the house and their mothers would go out for hours into the jungle. And of course the babies would scream to start with, and they were usually being taken care of by a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old. Those were the babysitters. I would say that it's much less traumatic for a child if you gradually begin from the very beginning. Say on day one, when you come home from the hospital, and you can try this on number two, it's too late for Julia, but there comes a time when you put the baby down on his little tummy, and you pat him, and you talk to him, and you leave him. And very likely he will cry. But that doesn't really go on for very long. If there are regular times during the day when he knows he is going to be left. And one of the obvious times when a child Julia's age, who is running around, should know that she is going to be separated from her mother, is when her mother goes into a room and closes the door, whether it's the bathroom or the bedroom or the study. I have a little study, and I like to go in there and close the door. Now, I don't have any small children around, but when my daughter was a toddler, I was doing desk work. We lived in the jungle, but I did have a desk, and I lived in a house with walls for part of the time. And she knew that when I sat down to that desk, she did not have my attention, and she could not have my attention unless there were some emergency. Well, there weren't any emergencies. She knew that when I said to her, "Valerie, I'm working," she had to find something to do. She had to entertain herself.
I think the thing that I hear sometimes from older women is your child is manipulating you. You know, you cannot let your child manipulate you. And so because I want to hold my child, and it angers me a little when somebody says your child's manipulating you, I don't believe that's right either. Do you think that a little child can manipulate you? Would you use that term?
Yes, I would. It's not a very nice term, and I can understand why you would feel angry about it, because a child really isn't supposed to be manipulating the parents, nor are we to manipulate the children in our training. We are to love them enough to say no to them, to say no in closing a door when you need privacy or quiet. And you suggested, can't remember whether it was on the air or whether it was in our conversation, that you said to me that the children, you know, if you closed a door, they would destroy the house.
That's correct. Most of my friends, if they come into my home, before I had Julie, I had knickknacks all over, and they would just take them off the tables and put them on the piano.
The mothers would.
The mothers would. They'd say, "I don't want them to destroy anything in your house." And one time I had two children over at my home, and I was afraid to keep them out of eyesight. They marked on my wall and on one of my chairs with a crayon. They sprayed my table with water. And
did the mothers do nothing?
No, the mothers get angry. They also get exasperated. I don't think they are quite sure as to what to do. And we are so afraid of being embarrassed in front of each other. We all want to parent so perfectly. And I think we're afraid sometimes of our children and how they embarrass us.
So what's the solution?
I believe it's what we've been discussing, is just training the child that there are limits. They need to learn that. Because when they, as you mentioned, when they go to somebody else's home, you don't want to have to go in their home and race to put all of their things up. The other thing that I have friends do is they come in and they say, be gentle, and allow the child to touch that. Do you think that the child should even be allowed to touch it if they are gentle?
No. I think that you are putting a temptation too great for the child to bear. There should be things about which, from the first day when he begins to crawl and starts to touch things that you don't want him to touch, things about which you say no. I don't think you want Julia pulling books out of the bookcase, do you?
No, I don't.
You certainly don't want her tearing the pages of your books. And that was the crucial point of testing when my daughter Valerie began to crawl. First thing she wanted to do was to pull books out of the bookcase. We didn't have much else that was worth anything in the jungle. We had no fancy pieces of china or crystal sitting around. But the bookcase was a no-no. And when she crawled across the floor and started for the bookcase, my husband Jim said, "Valerie, no. There have to be some negatives. And that's not a bad thing, and you're not destroying a child's self-image or his security or anything else." Once again, let me remind our listeners, Shelley and I are not talking as professionals, and I certainly have not studied nearly as much child psychology as Shelley has. I'm just a mother and a grandmother, and I hope that you will find that her questions and some of my answers may be helpful to some of you. They're not necessarily the law of Sinai.
That's called Children's Security. Questions on Mothering, Part 2. How do we find time for what's really important? Well, Elizabeth took some time to answer questions as part of the Wheaton Archives and Special Collection.
The struggle with finding time, as any American would know, is just so difficult. Finding time to use our time wisely for God and make an impact on others' lives. And finding time for devotions and that type of thing. Is there something that you could leave us a suggestion in some way on how to plan for the time that we want?
Well, we don't find time. God has given us all 24 hours a day, exactly the same amount of time. The great question is how we allot the time. And ask any college student, can you find the time to go to the football game? If that college student wants to go to that football game, he finds the time.
Yeah.
And that is a dead giveaway. We find time, we make time to do what we really want to do. And so my challenge to the students is, how much does it matter to you to get to know Jesus Christ? Does it matter enough to sacrifice something else, which might even be the football game, in order to have that time with Christ? If you can do it all, great. But most of us would be very unrealistic to think we can do it all. We've got to say yes to this and no to a whole lot of other things.
From the Wheaton Archives, some thoughts about time. Well, our time is just about up. But thanks for letting us come into your home or your office, maybe along with you as you drove across town, wherever we found you. On behalf of the Elizabeth Elliot Foundation, in cooperation with the Bible Broadcasting Network, let me invite you to check out all the resources at elizabethelliot.org. The resources include more Gateway to Joy programs, devotionals, lectures, talks, and more. elizabethelliot.org. And if you get a chance, leave a review for us sometime wherever you found this podcast. Thanks. But until next time, may God remind you each and every day, you are loved with an everlasting love. Underneath are what? Underneath are the everlasting arms.